Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
March 11th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast in the universe. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, I wake up this morning to some emails, and, you know, whenever there's something posted on Poker Radius.
You wake up to emails? They're like, oh, wake up, Chris.
They have a little beeping noise. They remind me that they need attention.
See, I'm not allowed to leave my phone on.
It's like a puppy or a starving baby, you know. Poker Radius, you know, whenever something's posted there, I get a little notification, and our listeners are already chomping at the bit.
We're a day late.
We had the audacity to record on the actual recording day this week. So, have no fear. The streak is still somewhat alive. I don't know if we're really still doing the streak, but it's alive and well. And
I still think we're doing this streak. So
one of the reasons we're recording it today is because this is our deadline week. And Scott was traveling too, so I'm working furiously on this half of the company doing the magazine. He's working furiously on his half to travel around the state and get more people to participate in advertising, things like that. And so we decided to do it on Friday today. And one of the things that happened during the week was, you know, I'm always furiously editing and trying to get all these stories in shape and. From our writers, and then, you know, design the magazine, I mean, so I can get you the proofs before the weekend, so we can always release the pages on time and make everybody happy.
And so you can stop panicking.
Yeah, so I can stop freaking out, you know. So one of our writers submitted an item describing the bad beat that was happening at one of their local casinos. You know, the qualifier, how much it's up to, you know, 200,000 or something like that. And then they have a descending qualifier, which means if it doesn't get hit after 1 week or 1 day or something, it gets worse and worse. Well, now, the latest one came in, and the writer had put it that the qualifier was ace, 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 jack, jack. And so, that's not our style for writing it out. We always spell it out, and we always say, you know, ace is full of whatever. And
right.
So, as I was writing it out for him really quickly, I came up with a rather creative typo that I think could actually be the perfect name for that sitcom you wanted to, you know, start the poker boom off with.
Okay.
Or the drama. So I was sitting here and I'm like, this is what I envision. Here's like the trailer you would hear. It's another hilarious ensemble sitcom from the brilliant mind of James Burrows. Aces full of hacks. Because I had a typo. Instead of aces full of jacks, I typed hacks. I'm sitting there laughing my butt off here at the table. It's like three minor league pitchers form an unlikely friendship with a couple of New York City cab drivers. And their weekly home poker game is full of cards and chips, wisecracks, and quips. It's aces full of hacks, Fridays at 9 on NBC.
Wow, look at that.
What do you think? Because aces, right? Three minor league pitchers. Mm-hmm. Hacks, which is another name for a cab driver. Come on!
The only problem with it, and I'm searching for a problem here because I always have to try and find some way of knocking you down, right?
Right.
Is that it's an insider term.
But that's the whole point.
The average layperson out there that we're trying to get into the poker game is going to go, aces, well, hacks. What does that mean?
Yeah, it gets them enticed. They're like, oh, what is that?
I like that. I like that argument of let's just make something so confusing that people have to like click on the story to find out
in.
What it is. Right?
Come on, how many times do you drive by a billboard and you have no idea what it is, and then until they explain
it, you know what to do? I keep driving.
Yeah, you look at it and you go, "What was that?" And then you keep it's in the back of your mind for the rest of the week. So you drive by it again, and then they explain what it is. You know, remember that Knology that came through here?
It's still here, so they got a different name now.
Yeah, they got a different name. I was like, wow. But when it was Knology, they were putting up like pictures of knives and knowledge and stuff, and they had the K, you know, missing the N, or some weird thing, and I'm like, what is going on here? But that got me thinking that, you know, we should come up with titles for your sitcom. Maybe somebody will hear that title. I got another one. From the pragmatic mind of David E. Kelly comes a drama so hip, you'll be the coolest person in the office just for mentioning the title. Kings of Clubs. Five L.A. nightclub owners huddle in the wee hours to play poker in the back room of one of their establishments, and the stakes couldn't be higher. Thursdays on Fox. See what I'm saying? There's two right there. There's two shows right there that's going to start the boom.
Well, that's two trailers right there.
If you make the two shows...
write the show and cast it and direct it and make it actually worth watching.
Come on, ensemble cast, Burroughs
is perfect
for that.
But you're off on a good start there, yes.
Yeah, and Kelly with his drama on Fox. I mean, at least I did some, you know...
You know, hey, one other nitpick, just small one, tiny.
Okay.
Is that you can't put them on the same night... because one presumably is going to be a half an hour sitcom, the other one's going to be a 10 o'clock hour drama for the old people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to need to come up with a second sitcom to kind of bridge the two. The 9:30 time slot.
No. One was Fridays at 9, the other one was Thursdays on Fox. They weren't the same
night. No, you're going to put them the same night.
Because now I got to put them on the same night.
Then it becomes, and not to violate trademarks, Poker Night in America.
All right. So we're going to have another sitcom.
Right, yeah. It's all about programming blocks now. Yeah. Because then people would get together at their home poker games and have the TV on and watch and yuck it up and then, you know, whatever you do during drama, while playing with their new friends and increasing the poker room.
All right, so then we have, in the same vein of Golden Girls, we have females on the felt, and they all work, like, at Joann Fabrics and...
So sexist.
No, I'm just trying to come up with the alliteration there, F&F, you know.
You need to get Twitch in there somehow. You know, Twitch. Just a bunch of geeky people broadcasting on the web.
I get to see it now. James Burroughs is on Twitter with you live. Hashtag Ace is full of hacks.
Well, you could do like a half an hour of stupid poker players doing stupid prop bets.
Yes.
You know, kind of like that little candy camera variety show. That could be the bridge. That could
be the bridge. There you go. And you could have the guy who has the breast implants on the show hosting it. Remember that guy?
Then you could have, like, you know, people from their home games video their own thing here. Faso said he couldn't, I couldn't eat 47 raw eggs in 3 seconds. I'm going to prove him wrong, not. And Faso, then he had that video, right?
Faso said he could beat Cosenza in a mile race. Let's go to the videotape.
What's that? Let's never watch that.
Let's never watch that again. There's more jiggling there than the freaking Jam Jelly Factory.
All right, well, you know, you're off and running there. So now we need are people that actually know how to make TV shows.
All right.
Flesh out your ideas a little bit.
I'm going to submit it.
Or flush out your ideas.
I'm going to submit it for the slush pile.
Well, as you mentioned, I was down in South Florida this week. Not a lot to report to the nation, but it's been a little... Usually, it's probably been as long as I've ever gone in between trips down to South Florida. I mean, back when we were Florida Magazine, I was down there almost like every week, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. And now, there hasn't been a lot change, I think. Big changes, I think, lately. But there have been a couple. You know, one, I was kind of looking into some anti-up cruise possibilities, which we'll bring to the nation if and when they make sense. But there's some intriguing stuff down there for us. And then I got to pop in at our good old friends, the Palm Beach Candle Club. And it's the first time I've been there since they've really kind of redone the entire inside. So new felts, new chips, new chairs, pretty much new everything inside. And it was bright and beautiful, and nice to see that they're doing very well there. Interestingly enough, I asked them how their circuit event went, because they just had their circuit last month.
Right.
They said it went very well. But, you know, they famously had this $1 million guarantee event the last couple of years that crowds and crowds of people showed up for. And they didn't do that this year. And really the reason they said was, it's just too hard in this market to put a big guarantee on something and not risk somebody else putting another event right on top of you.
That's what we wrote about on our profile.
Yeah, threatening guarantee. And it's like, you know, I know players want it. We want to give it to them. We feel bad we can't. But we can't take those kind of risks now. I mean, if it was just us doing it, absolutely we can guarantee it and make it work. But when we don't know whether the poker room down the street, the poker room over there is going to say, hey, here's a chance for us to make sure they miss their guarantee by putting another event on the schedule, we can't afford to do that. And we hope our players understand. And I like to think that the smarter players do understand that. Because it's a tough environment now. I talked to a couple other managers, too, that kept... not just this trip, but in the past couple trips that just say, you know, hey, if you don't put a guarantee on a tournament now, it's so hard to get people out, but you can't put a guarantee on there and fade it a lot these times. And it's just really, it's a difficult pickle for poker room managers to be in now.
Absolutely. And that's why we, you know, as a magazine, we tried to bridge that gap and make them understand, hey, you guys need to work together. It's, in the end, it will totally help everyone if you work together.
Exactly.
And they just don't, a lot of them just, they don't care. They want to see the immediate impact. And, you know, and a lot of the casino managers too, not the managers, but the owners are at fault for a lot of that too, because they're in this whole, you know, we want results now mode. And so they put the pressure on the poker room managers to make things succeed or undercut the other guys. And it's just not right. You know, it's just let it grow, you know. Like, it's like TV, you know? Now, in the old days, you know, when Cheers came out, another Burroughs reference, when Cheers came out years ago, they were at the bottom of the ratings. It took a good season and a half for people to really catch on, and then it became number one show for, like, a decade.
Yeah, Seinfeld had to even go higher, bigger climb.
So when you look at those kind types of things, and then all of a sudden it matures, gets a following, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with poker. I mean, you gotta let these tournaments... you know, have a chance, let these, you know, the audience or clients or whatever get a feel for how things are going and how the person's going to run the room and before you just fire them. There's so much turnover in this business. You know, we finally get a relationship with somebody and then they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible. It's just terrible. And all that's pressure from higher ups, you know, it's just, it sucks.
And then I spent some time at the casino at Dania Beach, which has been around for a long time. It's been around, obviously, long before Annie Up was, but... it's gone through so much change, and as soon as I walked in there, I texted you. I'm like, Chris, you're not going to believe what this place looks like now, because you know, you and I have been there a couple times together, at least. And you know, it's got new ownership, you know, from the first time we went down there, which really redid it and looked nice, and then now they brought in new owner, yet added owners, and closed down for I don't know several months. To do a complete renovation of the entire property. And they're not quite done with the outside yet, but the inside's done and looks phenomenal. You know, and there's a lot of poker rooms that I travel around the country and I walk in and I go, wow, this is really well done. And some, you know, some are bigger, some are smaller, just kind of depends. But this one, I thought, there's such little tiny things that I noticed just in the half an hour or so I was there that I thought was very interesting. So it's up on the second floor, so it's got a visible spot in the casino. I mean, and folks that aren't used to Florida here, in Florida, anywhere outside of South Florida, it's just poker and a race book. So the poker room is the only thing in the casino. In South Florida, they at least have slot machines. So here the slots are on the bottom, but the poker room is on the second level and very visible. I always like to see that, because I like to make sure the poker room is visible in the room. It doesn't have to be open to the room, but I think players need to know that there's a poker room there, right?
Yep.
But that's not unusual. They had a huge jumbo screen on the main floor, and the poker room overlooks it as a slot does, and they put the highlight matches up there when the highlight is on, and then sports, whatever, right? But it, just the sighting line. So there's the poker room, and then behind it is this really nice bar that has windows that look out the outside. If you're standing right on the bar, the Jumbotron fills your entire frame of vision. I mean, I guess it's really hard for me to explain, but if you see it, you'd be like, whoa, that's really cool. And obviously somebody spent a lot of time, you know, getting those angles absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
So you have that aha moment, you look up, that's pretty darn cool. But the coolest thing for me is I turned around and I'm like, I was talking to the poker room manager and I was like, you got a pinball machine and arcade game in the poker room. I mean, it's just randomly sitting there. That's pretty cool. Have you ever been to a poker room that has that? An arcade game?
Not that. No way.
And it was over by the... they don't have table games at Paramusicals here in Florida, but they have, like, three-card poker that... anything that's poker-related they can offer. So the machines are over by there, so they weren't by the actual poker tables for people out there. Like, you know, I don't want to hear some guy, you know, tilting, literally tilting, at the pinball machine when I'm playing. So that's not the case, but... I just thought it was really interesting, and the manager said, yeah, you know, they were just wheeled us in one day, and I'm like, I thought they were going to wheel it into the break room, but nope, left it here on the floor.
Hey, you're waiting for a table, you pick up your copy of Antioch Magazine, or you go play a game of pinball from 1980.
So it was like a really small touch that I just think is kind of interesting that I haven't seen. Obviously, no one's going to drive across the city because, you know, when they get bumped out of the tournament, they can go, you know, playing as Pac-Man. But the fact that it's there, I think it's almost like, even if no one ever plays it, I think it's just one of those kind of decoration things that gives a room a different vibe.
Yeah, different feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
But yeah, so if you get down there, check it out. And then, of course, you know, all the other rooms are still down there, and it's still the most competitive market ever down there. And, you know, the stories I keep hearing from managers when I talk down there, I don't envy any of them down there. That's a tough market to be in. But for poker players, lots of choices.
Yeah, people think there's a lot of pressure pushing 10. Imagine doing that job.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, just right down the street, there's 14 other poker rooms that are just cutthroat. It's crazy. But you get a lot of good stuff as a player that way, too. Just depends on the way they handle it. Hey, Antioch's most popular dealer contest is back, and we've made some changes to make the contest more inclusive and enjoyable. The biggest change we've made is we've opened nominations to anyone who wishes to nominate a dealer. So not just a dealer. Last year it was dealers can nominate themselves or whatever, but now anybody can, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So if you're a dealer or if you know one that's worthy of recognition, go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD through May 23rd to complete the nomination application. The winning dealer gets an Antiup Poker Cruise package for two to our November 14th sailing out of Tampa. And the top five will get prize packages that include a pair of Blue Shark optics. It's always good to have that contest back. It
serves so many purposes. It
recognizes the people that really are in the trenches, so we like doing that.
Yeah, and I'll be up in Cleveland next week, so I'm going to poke in at the what is for maybe the next couple months, still the Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland.
Right.
It's going to transition to the Rock. Rock. This summer. So.
Can you smell what the Rock is cooking?
Oh boy, too easy.
All right, any updates? Oh, you got more to say?
Hope to see last year's winner, Leslie Mesmer. That's where I was going with that. I was just randomly talking.
I figured you were going there, but then we started laughing. I thought you might forget, because you're old. Palm Beach Kennel Club in West Palm Beach, Florida is giving away Antioch Poker Cruise packages for our April 18th sailing to the Bahamas. The high hand every 30 minutes from 10:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. on March 11th and 12th will win a package. Also, Ameristar Vicksburg in Mississippi is awarding an Antioch Poker Cruise package for our April 18th sailing to the Bahamas at 11 p.m. this Wednesday. That's March 16th. Players can earn tickets by getting a flush or better all week long. For more information on all of our Antioch Poker Cruises, visit antiochcruises.com. Now, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Antioch listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. Comes from Matt Eden. He says, I'm a university student from the UK, and I've been playing online poker pretty much ever since the day I turned 18. Awesome. What has been most interesting to me is discovering mixed game formats and being able to try my hand at horse and eight-game tournaments online.
I miss them.
While I really enjoy these challenging formats, my one weak spot that always seems to get to me is the elusive game of stud eight. While I understand the basic principles of the high-low format, like not only playing for half the pot, I wondered if you guys had any general hints for players like myself who are relatively new to the mystical world of stud eight poker.
Yeah, there's your next show, the mystical world of stud eight poker.
See, that's the
Wednesday night 10 p.m. fantasy like law.
Yeah, I was gonna say you got the fantasy, you got the drama, you got the sitcom. We're loaded, prepare, man. We're ready to go.
Now, I know you answered him. I'm going to let you answer because this is your game, and I know you have a lot of tips. But I do want to ask your opinion here.
Mm-hmm.
Disrespect meant to Matt here for sending this in, but it's curious to me. I've seen people come up to me that has never played anything, any kind of horse game, and say, hey, this stud 8 looks really complicated. That I kind of get more than what Matt is saying. But if he's played all these formats and this is the game he doesn't get, I'm a little curious about that.
Because you're saying that he's got experience playing Razz and Stud?
He probably understands Stud because he didn't ask us about that, right? And he probably obviously gets Razz because he didn't ask us about that. And it's really a combination of the two. Now, obviously, once you combine the two, that's where the strategy changes a little bit. So it's definitely worth talking about. But I do find it interesting that people that have played those two versions struggle with Stud
8. Yeah. I think one of the maybe the reason is just that because your mind has to shift from, you know, when you're playing Razz, you're saying, okay, it's still just one goal to make the bad hand.
Right.
And instead, it's just one goal to make the good hand. But then when you get to Stud 8, you're like, okay, I got two choices. What am I supposed to do? Maybe that's it. I'm just speculating.
Like I said, I mean, obviously, it's a good question to ask for us to answer, too.
Yeah.
But I just find it a little curious.
What I told them is, you know, basically, we every year or two or something like that, we always have someone write in and ask us this, and we bring it up on the show. So there are actually more episodes in the past that are actually, dedicated to Stud 8.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we've done a couple of shows.
You know, we did just power
just
tips. Remember the power tips?
Oh, yeah, the power tips, yeah.
So, I mean, if you look back in our archives, either on here or even the SB Times ones, there's something out there that you can find more detailed than this, but what I told him was, every beginner, for me, in anything in life, when you're learning something new, it's really helpful to have a concept that you can just latch on to. And then, as long as you're following that concept, you'll do okay, and then branch out. And for me, it was always go for the low. Always go for the low first. A good low starting hand, such as, you know, ace, deuce, tray, or three wheel cards, or even three cards, seven and lower, that have potential. Especially with an ace. Ace is so powerful in that game because
absolutely.
It absolutely is the lowest card and absolutely is the highest card. So it can help you win both pots very easily. But if you are intent on staying with the low, you can backdoor into a high. Very rarely do you go for the high and backdoor into a low.
Right.
And when you're going for the high, you know, you can be sucked out on by someone going strictly for the low and then making a big hand and a low. And meanwhile, your ace is up and get cracked. So when you're first starting out, you know, you need to really just focus on, I'm going to focus on three baby cards, hopefully suited, hopefully with an ace. And then from there, you'll learn the nuances of the game and how you can be able to put pressure on, because you're just going for the low, but you can put pressure on two guys going high, especially online. Online, people, you know, you'll get three or four or five people in the pot. You know, in a home game, you tend to get a better quality of play because I'm assuming that you're probably playing lower levels since you're just getting used to this game now. You're not playing high stakes. So, you know, in a home game, you might clean the field out and go heads up with somebody going high and low, and then they're keeping their bets in front of them because they're not going to, you know, it's clear what they're doing. But online, you know, you could whipsaw somebody, you know, for a ton of money who thinks, oh, I've got the high. And the other guy's like, no, I've got the high. And you're sitting there going, oh, I got the low. And you're sitting there taking half of every one of their bets. Meanwhile, you backdoor into like a straight flush or a flush.
Yeah.
You know, and you take their straight or their, you know, aces up. And so that's the key for me when you're learning that game was once I figured that out, then the game became my favorite because I can grasp on to that one thing. You know, just like in Razz, it was always, you know, you always knew where you stood on Fifth Street. There was there was no, unless they had identical board showing, there was no secret. You're either ahead or you know that by what you have, you're still a favorite with two cards to come. You know, there was something you can grasp in Razz, and same with this. That's how I grasped. The other thing I told him was, since playing only low cards to start, you'll get a good idea of the flow of the game, the types of hands others are playing, the types of hands that win, and that makes, like I said, easy to grasp. This, of course, brings us to the platinum rule of Todd Brunson.
Yep.
He says, play only hands that can scoop. Never play a hand that can't scoop. While high cards can scoop, if there is no low, it's a rare occurrence that no low will get there when you look around the table, especially online. So playing low hands to start is really the best advice, and those hands need to be able to scoop. And when you're playing low, you can scoop. When you're playing high, you can't, aren't always guaranteed a scoop because there's always somebody using that ace-deuce trailer.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's where he's struggling, because this is the big difference between Studi and Omaha Eat. I mean, other than obviously the mechanics and all that kind of stuff. But I think probably people go into both 8 or better games thinking they're very similar. And this is one part that's really different, because you have a lot of times in Omaha 8 that the low doesn't get there.
Right.
And the high scoops. So, but it's drastically less likely that that's going to happen in Study, because you've got... Everybody's got their own 7 cards. You've got multiple people drawing, usually. And it's just really hard for that low not to get there. Unless, of course, there's a lot of betting and you get it down to heads up or something, which is probably, obviously how you play those big high-only hands if you're going to play them, is to really put the pressure on those low folks and get them out when, right. when their board isn't working out. But maybe that's it. Maybe it's, because, you can get away playing high-only cards in Omaha 8 and still do all right. I think it's really hard to play high-only cards, Study, and do well.
Yeah, you just really have to know. You have to know the nuances of that game. But really, if you got one thing to cling on, you can definitely succeed in that game. Especially if, like you said, if like you had mentioned earlier, if he's proficient at Stud and Raz. Then the best way to be proficient at those games is to be able to remember what cards are showing and what's been folded and what they're probably going for. So once you have that task at hand taken care of, that skill, then once that's mastered, you can convert that to Stud 8. Now all you're doing is going low, and then using that other skill, you'll be really good at it. So,
excellent.
Hey, why don't you take a crawl the floor? I feel like I've been talking forever.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antietmagazine.com, and we'll have Hollywood Kalita...
See, just like last week, you're making fun of me. It's not easy to say.
Out of practice. Hollywood Casino Toledo director Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. I'm going to see him next week, too. Now, cool. I feel bad that I just mangled his whole title there. But this week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antia group discussions. You want me to continue?
Yeah, it's yours. You're
all right, cool. So this week's comes from Goth. We're in a 1-2 no limit cash game. Oh, I put cash game there.
Ooh, I think it's a really important game. It's a cash
game. A lot of cash on the table. at a Connecticut casino, I hope it's Mohican Sun, home of the Antia poker tour coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
And the action is heads up. Seat 10 bets $15. Seat 4 raises to $35. And seat 10 tosses in a $100 chip without declaring his intent. The dealer declares it a raise, and I start to say that a single chip unannounced is just a call, but I am promptly shushed by a regular because I'm not in the hand. C4 shoves all in, C10 folds, C4 wins the pot. No floor was called, but I still believe that one chip unannounced is a call of a standing bet. Also, I believe I was wrong in speaking up when I'm not in the hand. Should I have waited until after the hand to do so?
Man, that's a lot of questions. First of all...
All easy ones. I know. We don't need to bother
Elliot. You could bother him next week when you're up there. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But first of all, the single chip is just a call.
Yes.
Right?
He is correct on that.
It is just a call. So if he didn't say it was a raise, then it's just a call. So that is correct. Now, the part about you not speaking up, no. Just because you're not currently in the hand, you were in that hand. You were dealt cards. You just folded. It's every person's not only right, but actually responsibility. To find it, if there's an injustice at the table, to bring it to the attention before it's not repairable.
Right.
Right? Absolutely. So, no, I think you were right about the chip, and you were wrong about the being wrong. Right. If that's, that makes sense.
And what I told him is I think what happened is this regular player, and I see this often, these players get confused over what the one player to a hand rule means. And the difference is that... Everything that happened to this hand was out in the open. Everybody at the table, including the dealer, saw everything that happened.
Yeah.
In that case, if something wrong is happening, you absolutely have the right to speak up. And as we said, in a lot of rooms and probably in poker ethics in general, you have a responsibility to speak up and say something is wrong. And a responsibility to tell that guy that's shushing you, hey, I'm sorry, I am making this game fair, and you shouldn't be shushing me.
Yep.
Or just ignoring him. I don't want to get you in a fist fight over this. But the difference is if say, somebody at the end, some guy raises, and the guy next to you, you're not in the hand, but the guy next to you is the last player, and he's looking at his hand, and he's like, oh, I don't think I can call. He calls, and he's like, oh, you got me beat, but you notice that he has a flush in his hand that he didn't. Now you say, hey, you've got a flush. That is a breach of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to let that player table his hand so everybody can see it. And so I think people get so fixated on that that they think any time that you're not in the hand and you are interjecting into the hand an opinion or some sort, that it's wrong. And it's not. There's a difference.
Yeah, there's a difference. You're not allowed to get involved into the action of the people are doing or saying, oh, he raised or something like that. That's different kind of information. But an actual adjust the table is right. And the thing I found interesting, by the way, was this guy tosses a $100 chip. They make it a raise. Clearly a raise to 100, I would think, because what else could the dealer decide that it's going to be a raise?
Not clear. This is the problem when you don't declare. This is why we have these rules.
No, but I mean the dealer made it a raise. So
right, exactly.
I'm saying he probably made it 100 than the dealer. I don't know. But either way, he folds.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to edit this down. The guy got the $100 chip from the guy. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then he folded.
Right.
Which is bizarre.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that guy actually, the shusher cost that guy $65.
Yeah, because it would have been just a call, and then he...
Actually, I shouldn't say the shusher cost him that. The guy actually cost himself that, not knowing the rules.
Right, exactly.
Not knowing that one, or not adhering to what we always say, verbalizing your intent anyhow. Yeah. Although, obviously, it sounded like the fact that he didn't fight this, clearly he meant the raise to 100.
Yeah, I guess. But then you fold.
Been able to.
Man, they must have been some serious... Maybe it really was a cash game, because they must have some serious money on the table fold after putting out a $100 raise. You know? That's some serious money.
Yeah, so it's difficult to table, because, you know, you don't want to speak up and be wrong, right? You know, it's the worst thing anybody wants to do, so I think a lot of people who don't speak up out of fear of that, and I struggle with that a lot, even though now I feel like I understand the rules much better than I did when I first started playing. But it's important to know the difference and know when you're supposed to speak up. And this was a very easy one. I'm really shocked that the dealer let this go and the players let it go. And
yeah. You know, and there's a way to hedge the way you comment at a table, too, so it doesn't sound...
Yeah, like, you can do it non-threateningly, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could totally just be like, hey, correct me for a moment, I'm just curious now. I'm trying to learn the game still, but he threw a $100 chip and didn't say anything. Isn't that a call?
Yeah.
You know, and then the guy might have shushed you. You know, he might let you get away with that at least. Or, you know, if you're a little concerned or not sure of what you're saying. But, yeah, so this guy lost $65 extra for no reason, and then... Well, at least we made him feel better about what happened here. So
definitely
speak up when something like that happens. We have a brand new O'Malley's move. I'm so excited. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $5, $10 Omaha 8 game. The action has been pretty steady. Not a lot of folds pre-flop and plenty of action post-flop. The blinds post, and it's to us, under the gun, with the ace of clubs, king of diamonds, jack of diamonds, tray of clubs. This is a good hand. We're going to raise it up. The MP calls. It's folded around to the cutoff who calls. Button calls. Small blind folds. Big blind calls. And we're going to a flop with five players and five big bets in the pot. The flop is as ricky-ticky-tavy as you can get. The queen of spades, 10 of diamonds, 9 of clubs comes down, giving us the nut high, a backdoor flush draw, and no chance of it getting split by a low. The big blind checks and we bet. The MP raises and everyone else folds. We raise and the MP caps. We, of course, call. With 9 big bets in the pot, the turn is the 8 of hearts. We once again lead at it, but this time the MP slows down and calls. Interesting. There are now 11 big bets in the pot, and the river is the 8 of clubs. So, the board paired. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This comes from Jeff Domage, and this is from the Peppermill in Reno. Loves the Reno. A lot of fun out there.
You love the Reno? He said you love the Reno.
Yeah, it's, the kids say now they put the bell in front of stuff. I love the Annie O.
I love the iTunes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Hey, a nice room in Reno. He says he's playing the wee hours at a 1-2 no limit hold'em table. Doesn't say it's a cash table, so we're going to say it's normal. Right?
Okay.
He's the chip leader with about $900. All right, so maybe it is a cash table.
Wow.
With one other player close behind with about $850. The villain here is just for the weekend, but already has a reputation for having a broad range and has been caught bluffing misdraws as well as good hands in large pots. The villain is under the gun and raises to 13, and there are three callers before it gets to us. We don't actually know where we are, but he raises three callers. So, and we have the ace of clubs, king of diamonds.
Wow. Well, okay, so what we're seeing here is this guy likes to bluff, and we've got a bunch of people in this hand, and you could treat it either way. I mean, you could go with a call in position. Of course, I don't know where we are, so we could have people behind us who might want to now squeeze everybody. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to squeeze here and take control of this hand in position. And ace-king is a real good hand to do that with. I realize you like to call it a drawing hand and piss off.
Aha, see, I knew you'd bring that up.
Yeah.
In this case, it is not.
But in this case, yeah, I don't think it is either. I think in this case, this is powerful now. You got a guy who's prone to bluffing, and you got callers in between that, if they had a bigger hand or a good hand, they would have re-raised this guy. So, I think I'd probably make it a nice raise here.
Sure.
You know, like $60 or something.
60, wow.
Well, let's look at it this way. He made it 13. If nobody else called, then you'd re-raise him.
Oh, that's right. Callers at 13. All
right. Right?
Right,
you'd make
right.
it 42 or something
right,
like exactly. that, 39. Right? All right, so I'm going to make it 60.
I was thinking there were limpers, and then he raised 13.
Right.
You're correct. So there's a lot of money already there. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, so here's the difference in this hand from what I normally would say with ace-king. I think ace-king is when I call it drawing hand, it's not the same that I mean when they have a suited connector or something like that, right?
Right.
I think it's a hand where your head's up that you have to hit that ace or king. I don't think that ace king at showdown is going to work very often, particularly in a hand where there's betting on future streets. So that's why I call it a drawing hand. I think you have to hit. But that doesn't mean, I mean, if here if I had suited connectors, I would just limp right along here, or not limp, I'll call the raise maybe with all that money and see if I could hit my hand. But hitting an ace or king is not going to win me this hand, right?
Right.
When I've got four people already in it, plus whoever knows comes behind me. Now, my hand is powerful enough that I can raise and raise pretty substantially here and maybe get heads up with a big pot. And then I don't really have to hit my ace or king to win. So it's a different of this the scenarios here than what we normally are talking about, I think.
Right. Because you've taken control of the hand, so they still know you have ace king. You can be taking control of the hand with kings or queens or aces or whatever, so you represent after that. So it's a hand to take control with, and if you do hit it, it's going to be very powerful, and if you don't, it's still powerful because you took control of this hand in position with a big re-raise. So
the only reason I'm the only thing I'd be worried about is the villain is under the gun and raised to 13th. I'm always concerned about an under the gun raiser. I mean, obviously sure. It doesn't mean that they're always so strong. But generally speaking, they are. And if we're up against aces or kings here, that's a bad thing for us. So, but we'll get that information by raising here, right?
That's right.
You know, it's very unlikely if he has aces or kings, he's not going to 3-bet us when he gets back to him. And that doesn't mean he has aces or kings if he 3-bets us, but at least it gives some credence to that fear, and then we can proceed accordingly. But if he doesn't, then I feel really strong about this hand.
Right.
All right, our hero makes it 35 to go. A little light, I think, right?
I think that is light. I mean, normally, without even the callers, you would have made it 39, likely. Something like that, because three times. I know it's a tournament rule, but works pretty effectively in cash games, too. You know, and if anything, a lot of people bloat their bets in cash games.
Right.
So, so 35 is under what normally you would do if you were just running ABC tournament poker. So then you got three callers, which is another $39 in the pot. So you've got 39, 49, you got $52 in the pot plus the blinds, and you only made it 35 to go. All these people are going to call for 20-something more dollars.
Really,
you know, $22, they're all going to call.
Yeah.
So you really need to separate yourself from everyone and make a serious bet there.
Because I don't know what I'm hoping for in that flop now if I go 4 or 5-handed.
Yeah, really.
I mean, I'm almost going to have to flop Broadway to feel comfortable.
That's right.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
All right, so the end of the gun player and one other player calls. All right, well, I guess it kind of worked.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe a little bit more, we would have got heads up, which would have been better, but I'm actually kind of surprised that many people voted this.
So there's a lot of money in the pot already, because now we made it 35 and two more callers, so that's 105 on top of
right
the...
right there, yeah, plus the two other folders.
Two other folders, so that's 13. 26. So you're looking at 131, 135 nice. In the pot already.
Yep. Yeah.
Something like that.
All right, the flop is King of Clubs, 10 of Diamonds, 8 of Hearts. So again, this is what I was worried about, right?
Right.
Now, if it was heads up, I would feel pretty confident about this, but now we got this third player in here. I don't know what to think, really.
Still a pretty nice flop for us. We have top, in a, you know, I mean, the only thing you're really afraid of is if somebody just popped a set on you, really. No one has King 10 or A 10, I don't think, in this situation. Yeah, there's some draws now, but that's not to be worried about. I think we've got to make it a nice, you know, a nice $75 bet here or so, $60, $65, $75 bet here. If it gets to us, if somebody...
Yeah, and the other thing I like about this, too, is the end of the gun villain didn't raise us.
Yeah.
Pre-flop when we, you know, he didn't three bet us. So it's hard for me to put him on kings now, which is what one of the hands I was really worried about. He still could.
It's going
to
suck if he has aces, though, because that's what he's hoping for, is that you have ace-king and you get your king.
That's true, too. But even then, aces, I think he would have popped. So, I mean, I'm putting less credence. I'm not dismissing, but I'm putting less credence on him having aces or kings.
Yeah.
Now, as possibly as queens, which is fine, because now we have our king.
Yeah.
He could have tens, and now he has a set, but, you know, as we said, we always got to worry about that. But otherwise, I'm pretty happy with this flop, and I want to bet pretty strong, too.
Yeah, I was thinking it was 105 in the pot. I forgot it, the other guy, so it's like 130, so I'm probably going to bet like 100 here.
100, yeah, sure, why not, right?
Yeah.
All right, so the end of the gun, the player checks, as do the second player. So it checks around to us, and our hero checks.
Wow. That doesn't make any sense. First of all, what are you waiting for? Why are you playing this hand? Second of all, we took command of this hand. Why aren't you following through on that? I don't see the reasoning behind that at all. If
you know,
anything, now you're giving him
kind of slow play things where your hand isn't strong enough to be slow playing.
No, there's no way. I mean, you're also giving them a chance to catch up for free. I mean, what's the point of raising preflop if you're going to let them see the flop for free and or the turn for free? I mean, I just don't. There's a whole reason to raise in this to get isolated and then take control. You have control, now you've lost control.
Yeah.
Always bet there. $100, easy. Boom, stack of reds.
The turn is the ace of diamonds, so our board now is king of clubs, 10 of diamonds, 8 of hearts, ace of diamonds, and again it checks to us.
Yeah, I mean, now is somebody really slow playing a set or a somehow turned Broadway?
Suited Queen Jack or something, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, would they still slow play it now? They'd want to bet. There's so much money out there. You're losing streets to make money. So
yeah, that's actually a good point, that if you have a hand now, you can't count on us betting.
Because we checked the flop.
Right. So if we bet the flop, then you can maybe make a case, even though I think you still bet out. I think you can make a case that, that we're going to bet. But now, if you're that player and you have that strong a hand, you can't trust that there's going to be a bet made here, and you got to take care of it yourself.
Here's the other thing, too, is it feels like... Here's what it feels like now. It feels like they checked to us thinking we were going to bet when we didn't bet. Now they see the ace. Now they're afraid because we raised preflop. Now they think we really do have the ace. Now they check again to us because now they're completely afraid because, okay, you didn't hit the king, but now you've hit the ace. You clearly have to have an ace or a king in your hand. Now you're going to bet, and that's why they check to you. Maybe they're looking to check raise you now. But it's such a horrible line of action to me that I don't know. But if it checks to us again, we got to bet. You got top two. What else are you waiting for? And now you got to protect against diamonds just in case. Another four-card Broadway could come on the last. So you got to bet now. Same bet, too. I mean, nothing's changed. Pot size hasn't changed.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Maybe a little less, maybe 80 or something, but really, you have to bet here, right?
He bets 60.
Oof. I don't know if that's enough.
Although no one's showing any real strength here, so.
Yeah, they could think you're trying to steal.
Now you're just trying to get some money out of it, maybe. I guess that's one way of spinning it.
But. Yeah.
There's only one more card to come that we have to worry about, too. So, but still, I think your 100 is correct. But I could defend a 60 here more than I could on the flop, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
The end of the gun player makes it 200, and the other player folds.
Oh man, knew that was coming. Raises at 200. Well.
So I also think interesting here is that you and I would have said we would have put 100 in, right?
Yeah.
And we put 100 in, it changes the math a little bit for me. Now, we didn't put the 100 in, so it doesn't actually change the actual math, right?
Right.
But I think if I'm going through my head, if I would have bet the 100 and someone raised it 200, then I'm, I think, almost easily calling this, right?
The other thing, too, is that if we had bet on the flop, if we would have bet 100 then on the turn, we would have probably bet another 100 or 80 or something. So it's almost what we would have bet on those two streets anyway.
Right, right.
So yeah. I might call the 140 just to see if we fill up or see what he does on the river. But
it makes it more difficult because it's 140 rather than 100.
Yeah.
I guess not a lot, but a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the hard part for me is that it's hand of the week. And, you know, hand of the week, they're always losing. So, you know, to say I'm just going to call is tough because you think, well, they're probably behind now. But if I'm at the table and this is happening to me, I wouldn't have gotten myself in this spot, so it's hard to say. But I got top two here. I think he might think we're stealing. So,
well, you also have to think it's possible that he thinks that we were weak because we didn't. I mean, who makes that? You think about the hand, you're putting people in a range, right? He raises the whatever 35 pre-flop, right?
Right.
And then he gets that flop and checks.
Yeah.
What kind of hand is that, right? And then now on the turn, you bet this minuscule amount. The villain could probably think that we just are taking a shot at the pot now.
The other thing I want to remember.
So it's possible that our ace king is like really good right now.
I want to remind you, too, that he mentioned that the villain is a bluffer who misses his draws. When he misses a draw, you know, he tends to bluff. So.
Yeah.
He could be saying, I think you're stealing. I'm going to rebluff you here and take it away from you. So I could raise. You know, we aren't very aggressive in our hands of the week when we tend to be aggressive when we have the hands. But in a spot like this, if this guy really was a bluffer and we really don't believe him, I might raise him. I might say, oh, yeah, I really do have it. I'm not stealing it. And then make it, you know, some, one, you know, 350 or something.
Interesting.
But
I think there's enough doubt here that I'm not convinced. That
yeah.
Here. I think there's enough in our favor that I'm willing to make the call pretty easily.
Yeah.
But I don't feel confident enough that we're really ahead. Because it could be, you could have tens, right?
You could have a set.
Which makes perfect sense with the way this played out.
I'm going to call, but there is some merit to raising given the way this guy has played before
exactly.
with the bluffing. Yep. But I think I'm just going to call in this situation.
All right, our hero calls, and the river is the Four of Hearts, final board, King of Clubs, Ten of Diamonds, Eight of Hearts, Ace of Diamonds, Four of Hearts. And the villain goes all in for his remaining squiggly 600.
Well, that's a huge bluff if he's bluffing, so I don't know if this hand's worth 600 top two. I mean, the only real draw that got there was the Broadway draw.
Right.
So, the only draw, really. So, feels like he's got a set.
We're losing to a set, right?
Yeah, it feels like we're either way ahead or way behind, as Lee used to say.
But either the one, well, I guess there's four. So 600 is like a pot-sized bet, right? So, I mean, that would be a reasonable bet, even if that person has a hand, right?
Yeah, but it's just a huge bluff in a cash game that's 1-2 or whatever. And
475. I guess it's overbetting the pot, yeah. So. Yeah.
That's a lot of money. He could be betting because he can't win. You know, he made a point of mentioning the guy was a bluffer, though. And sometimes you do that to say, this is why I called, because I thought he was a bluffer, and then he
showed like the nuts. It seems like an aggressive bet, though, for somebody that we called on the turn, right?
Yeah.
We made this weak bet for 60. He made a significant raise, and we didn't re-raise, so we just called.
You know what? I'm going to throw caution to the wind. I'm going to call. I'm going to throw caution to the wind, buddy. I don't usually do that. I usually chicken out or whatever, but
I think I am, too. I think it's not standing up to me for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, if we check the flop, why doesn't he bet the turn with a set? Because now, why, because he hit the ace? No, if he gets the ace, he's going to call your bet anyway. So why are you, what are you waiting for? Broadway just got there for free. Why did that guy check the turn again to us? Two checks in a row. and then raise us because he thinks we're stealing it? I mean, if he really had a hand, are you really going to count on a check raise again? How does he know we don't have queens and we're afraid of the king and the ace? You know, I'm just going to call him. And if we lose, you know, you learn. But I think I'm going to call here. I really do.
All right. After tanking for about 3 minutes, I call, and he turns over the jack of diamonds, queen of diamonds.
Oh, man.
Now, wait, hold on. I was the villain in this hand, the old switcheroo, which normally we hate, right?
Yeah.
But I let it go this time because I think it's interesting because how we talked about how he played the hand throughout this, not knowing it was him, right?
Right.
And I think the big thing was that's a very, I don't know what the word is. I mean, discipline is probably a nice word. Checking that turn,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's crafty. Because that's what I said earlier about now they can make it look like this guy had to have hit his ace and now we're really afraid, and that's why we check both streets. So he got the bet out of him. But it could have just as well been pocket queens, and now he's not putting another dime in that pot either because of the ace. And then you're only going to have one street to get any money out of him. So you got very fortunate on the turn there with being able to check raise him.
I think we should have bet there. Now he says the odd thing is that I had just lost a moderate pot when that same player had ace-king, as we both flopped an ace, and he checked the flop, which induced me to call later in the hand. So when he checked the flop and then bet in this hand, race called the turn, I had him on ace-king. After the hand, all my neighbors, and even later the dealer, away from the table, couldn't believe I got paid off. So I'm wondering if you can make the analysis in his mind and see if you come to a similar call or an easy or not-so-easy fold. Well, I definitely think it was an easy call there, but... I'm going to give credit to our real hero here for the way he played the hand and getting our stack out of us.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only way that I'm going to pay him off there.
I can see myself laying down.
I think he got lucky that we had ace-king there. Of course, I think he said based on this play, he kind of put us on that, so that helps.
I don't see how you put him on ace-king after that flop, though. If he has that flop and doesn't bet it, there's no way I'm putting that guy in ace-king. You re-raise with ace-king, you get a king on the flop on an innocuous board, and you don't bet it? How could you put him on ace-king?
Well, I guess that's king? What he's saying, is that the player played ace-king the same way previously.
Oh, I know, but it's just, you know, I know the player's not a type of player that plays things differently, mixes it up. You know, I mean, it's just so difficult to keep him on that in one session at a home, you know, one session in a casino. You know what I mean? It's hard to...
But here's the other thing. What if he bet out the turn? Would he not get raised by the ace-king?
He might.
To me, I think there's a better chance of getting value out of the hand by betting and letting that guy raise me if I really am confident he has ace-king than check and having him put in what he put in is a really bad bet and then having to raise and hope that he calls the raise. And then a river bet as well.
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, it worked out again, but you know, if I really thought, you know, if we're playing, if I can, if it's like Russ Hamilton and I can see his cards, I still think I bet that turn.
Yeah. Do you? So now is Jeff admitting that he's the bluffer who bluffs when he misses draws and gets caught?
No, I think. Well, I don't know. Maybe
it's got to be right. So he's setting us up with that line. That's what made me call was that one line that he said about the guy being a bluffer.
Yeah.
You know, that's what set me up. So it works. There it goes. Show you if you're gonna bluff, make sure you show it so you can use it later on somebody. Because it worked on me. I called. You know, maybe if I'm in the actual game itself and I don't, you know, usually they lose. So that's why I would have folded in it if I had, you know, normally because hand of the week always loses. But in this case, I wanted to throw caution to the wind, and of course it bit me on the ass. So. Unbelievable. Yeah. Sorry, Jeff. Well, good for you that you won.
Yeah, good
for
you.
But stop doing that to us. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.